School District for more information.
To catch the beat from Market Street on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. Your community radio station is in the heart of the action in downtown Champaign. And Catch the Beat brings highlights of local news, arts, culture, and issues to pay attention to. I'm your host, Cope Cumston. Tonight, I'm airing the second half of the July 4th panel I recorded at the Rose Bowl, which led off three sessions called The Summer of Solidarity, spearheaded by Amy Rickman and Loretta Gaffney, local artists and activists. This panel is titled Art is the Great Democrat, Visioning Community. It includes the stories and thinking of eight longtime local artists and leaders. We'll launch in the middle of the panel with the second question Amy asked her panelists. You'll hear the voices of Emily McCown, Kayla Brown, Loretta Gaffney, Stacey Robinson, Warren DJ Mixon-Smith, Bill Taylor, Chris Birdie, and Cynthia Oliver. You can hear the first half archived under Catch the Beat for July 9th on the Spinitron listing on weft.org. This segment begins with Amy Rickman.
Summer of Solidarity is a grassroots effort run by a motley crew of people who love Champaign-Urbana. We have three questions. Everybody's going to answer them individually.
What should locals who want to advance rights and justice know about the role of art in democracy, in community, in organizing, or in solidarity?
Well, it takes all kinds, and talking about the power of art and collaboration in resilient community makes me, I'm getting a master's right now and working on a thesis about what I think is the kind of social power, the potential of whatever I've learned as a musical collaborator, especially in this community. And I think that musicians have a special insight into what is possible and imagining how to do shared leadership effectively and build resilient democracy. And I got some of this idea from Danielle and her new book. Danielle Chenoweth is coming out with a new book, so props to Danielle. The idea that I'm working out is about how musicians have a special way to hold your own voice and listen and make space for others. That it's this constant yes and. I think the practice that we do as improvisers, Jason and the others, like in the community making music together, that it's not top-down hierarchical jam that we do. Take turns leading, and then we take turns supporting each other. There's rich possibility in imagining different ways of sharing power and sharing leadership. Crafting your voice while also making space for others, making that ground of sound. I think musicians are going to help imagine a better way of sharing power. Yeah.
I'm going to add to that because that's kind of my world too, and it's music in my life and in, you know, the community that I've come up in is it's just been such a powerful connector. I remember being a kid and being this kind of awkward, you know, weird skater girl, and you know, having a hard time like socially, you know, growing up, which is really hard in your formative years. And you know, music was always a place where I found people that I connected with, that I heard things said that I didn't know how to say, that I grief that I felt but didn't really know how to express. There was just so much in that like kind of universal language of music that was really powerful for me, and so I think that being able to foster environments that provide that opportunity for others, that encourage people to express, takes a lot of intentional effort, which this town has never struggled with, which I love it here for that reason, because it really is a very vibrant community that really, really engages that and the uniqueness of the humans here and the diversity. So, you know, art in general, it can be a conduit for good, it can be a conduit for communication, you know, fighting loneliness, fighting dealing with grief. So many very, very human things, and the human experience is really hard, and especially right now. And these are ways that we can connect, and the people that are doing that work to try to create those spaces, like being here today, are so important and need so much support.
While there are spectacular artists of music and visual art and online stuff and all kinds of creativity, a lot of people don't feel like they want to engage in that or feel like they're able to engage in it because it's too lofty, it's too complex. But anybody can be part of it. It seems like it almost always done by people doing a little part.
It occurred to me when I got the email invite, I saw solidarity, and I thought, so what does that mean? Solidarity is creating a community. And what I did for many years was I taught 3D studio art, so it's ceramic sculpture and 3D design. So just, if you've ever familiar with that, just those studios require a community of working together, cleaning up, maintaining equipment, making stuff, and it's open, and you're working, you're interacting. It's marvelous. I feel blessed to be a part of that. It's really cool. Because other classes like drawing are not set up that it's more, it can be more of a math class or something. So within that, people interact from all sorts of backgrounds. It's totally cool. Around here, people from rural areas, very conservative, and then people from micro-urban environments here in town, and it's great. So those who know, I like to tell stories, you know. And so here's a quick one illustrating this. I was telling some senior students, says, oh, there's this thing in the country called Henry Bowles, you know, as I said, what people do. And, oh, and what they do is they raise money for people who need food, local organizations. So these two, so I told them that, they kind of process it. These two seniors says, we want to do empty bowls. And I said, fine. You know, so I told them like how to go about doing it. And they had the leadership skills and the business skills to organize it. And they started the Empty Bowls Project for over 20 years, I think about 20 years. And all the money went to the soup kitchen. They made pots and bowls, and they got local potters to do this, and it was very viable. And then after one of them passed away, sadly, it kind of went downhill, you know, with their help. And now, but there was enough people around that knew about it, so the CU Potters Club there over in Havana is going to revive it this year. Right? So, but anyway, I think in that case, I was just, again, I was just a catalyst. And it's really affirming to kind of see that, I think, things like that.
I'll contribute to what was said a little earlier about the size of an action that, you know, oftentimes we think that we have to do something big for it to be a part of a movement. The mark, the creative mark, has to be large enough to be recognized, you know, large communities. But it's also about the small cuts. I'd like to think about it as interest, compounded interest. It's about the cumulative effects of every little action that we take. And so, as was said earlier, each individual can do something to make a difference creatively. I believe in what Stacy said about the visual, but I also, as a dancer, as a choreographer, I believe about the embodied, the fact that we take up space, and how we take up space matters. And I like to think that we are encouraged to take up space in certain arenas that also makes a difference. What encourages me about art and artists is that we ask why. Something is done in a particular way, why? Could we think about it this way? Or, you know, my shit is twisted. I think about it this way. And that thing could be the catalyst to change how everything is done, or how, you know, a small thing is done, which then sends a series of, you know, kind of changes down the line. For a number of years, this was the reluctant leader part. My arm was twisted to be the Associate Vice Chancellor for Research in Humanities, Arts, and Related Fields. It was interesting to go into a position like that and look at the kind of mechanics of the institution, and then to ask questions like, why? Well, why is this done this way? And to have people say, well, that's how it's been done. It's like, well, that's not okay. So maybe we should change it. And there were some things that we changed and, you know, they failed. And I tried it again, a different way, it failed again. And I remember one time the vice chancellor said to me, are you really, really willing to do this one more time? And I was like, yes, I am going to figure this out. And I don't care about failure. I've failed 3 times, I'm going to try it again. Right before I left the office, it worked. And she called me this year. I moved on and have initiated the Office for Arts Integration, that we'd like to collaborate with community, with faculty, with students, with a lot of folks, so please contact us. I'm in this office, we're building programs, and my old boss, the vice chancellor, calls me and says, you know, that thing that you were willing to fail on finally worked. It's beautiful. It's an elegant system now. And I was like, yes! So we have to also embrace failure.
Thank you. Stacey, what you said about that we need to show people what a just future looks like through art really resonated with me, that we can't wait until we're ready to have that future. We need to imagine it now. Solidarity is built on stories. I think that art is so integral to solidarity that they're really one. I'm surrounded by great artists here. Artists are workers. The work that they do, just because it's creative, does not mean it's not work. They should be organized and represented.
Yes.
And yes, so I'm supportive of that. But I want to talk about not just that artists are workers, but that workers are artists. As a teacher, and if any of you have ever taught, I'm sure you know, teaching is more art than science, right? The classes that I teach, because I teach in a social science department, and I teach humanities, artsy type classes, sometimes people think, you know, storytelling and labor movements, that's extra, that's like a nice extra class. Science fiction and revolution, oh, that sounds like fun. It's fun. If you read The Parable of the Sower by Octavia Butler, and that's required reading now, you can't tell me that time travel isn't happening right now. You can't tell me that Octavia Butler isn't coming to us now in 2025 in LA to say, hey, here's the way, here's a roadmap. It's not an accident that the University of California and other universities want to squelch what's creative about our work. They want to take what's creative about teaching and have a robot do it. They want to, for example, in the World Languages departments at UCLA, they're downsizing them because they basically think that it's skill and drill, that that's what the teachers are doing with the students, when in fact it's critical thinking, it's cultural studies, it's just in other languages, in world languages. So that can't be automated, but they don't understand that. And that's why I think art is powerful. It doesn't translate for some folks in power, perhaps because it's powerful. Perhaps because it's scary to them. So, yeah, I would just emphasize again, work is art, and art is work.
Art doesn't just exist to reflect struggle, but it can also be used to organize people.
Yep.
I believe that with the things that we do, as far as like DJing and throwing, you know, these events, it doesn't just create a space for people to have a good time, but also create a space where people can be around like-minded individuals. I can just recall maybe being at home late, working on something, and I'm struggling with it. And I can feel so isolated, like, man, I feel like I'm the only person in this world that's going through this. But then you see someone, you speak to a friend, and they say, oh, I'm going through that too. And you go, man, I don't feel so alone anymore. The idea of just being in isolation, I believe that it's not a real thing that'll get us past what we need to, what we're trying to get to. Because I think when you have a collection of people, I may want to start a band, and I might just have a microphone. Well, no one wants to hear me sing a cappella all day, you know? So Stacy might have a guitar, Amy might have a drum set, someone might have a piano, and if we come together, we can have an actual band, and we can probably take this thing on tour, right? So, I just feel that when you create spaces through your art, you're providing a space for people to possibly meet someone that they never knew that this person existed in the same town as them. Or they may meet someone who is a piece of a puzzle that was missing for them, that they couldn't figure out for a long time. So I just think that is highly important that to continue to have these type of spaces for people to be able to come in and interact with one another. When I do recaps from our shows that we have, I take video, and I have all these different videos. I probably have 100 shots of videos that I do at night. But I always ask myself, I say, which videos would be the most effective to show people? And it's always the videos of all of these individuals from different walks of space, walks of life, dancing together, enjoying their time. And I always use that because I'm a firm believer that joy is a form of resistance to oppression. So it wouldn't be possible for me to get those images if we didn't have these spaces created for folks to be able to come amongst each other. So
this is our last question, and we're going to start with Emily on this one, and we're going to talk about solidarity to wrap up. It's often a mistake for us to assume that we know what somebody else needs, or think that what brings us support actually brings somebody else support. Our idea of help is not always everybody else's idea of help. What we need to do, if we really care, is ask people what they need, and we need to really listen. And we need to ask again, because these things change. So, with that in mind, we ask our very impressive panel, what does it mean, or what would it mean, to stand in solidarity with the spaces you've collectively created around art, or to stand in solidarity with art and the larger movement?
Oh, yes, and the finder joy, joy as resistance. I think that we need each other for the long haul, and if you're feeling down, as so many of us are, as our democracy is being radically dismantled, that finding your local joy is critical for our community resilience.
Yes.
Like, we need you to find your joy. I guess as I sit here kind of representing the Monday Night Hootenanny, like, there have been all these like articles that have come out recently, as of late, that like there's this epidemic of young male loneliness or something. And no, the Hootenanny is not for everyone. It's a lot of Americana. It's a lot of white men and me. And what I think is like profound is when I hear those news articles, I'm like, well, not in my house. They're sharing. They're like, we're playing. We're taking turns. We're finding our joy for the long haul. And there's a reason why isolated white men are finding white Christian nationalism on TikTok, you know? Like, everyone needs space to find belonging, and that's what people crave. And I'm trying to make spaces and find places and collaborate with people to find and create belonging for each other in safe ways that makes all of our expression shine. And I feel like, yeah, I want to build coalitions. This thing, this Summer of Solidarity, reminds me so much of the Rainbow Coalition in the late 1960s in Chicago. And you had like the white working class street gangs with the Black Panthers like making breakfast, doing radical political alliances across difference. And so, know your history, find your people, find your joy, and let's work together. Yeah.
The kind of work that we all do up here, you know, is something that kind of happens against the grain a lot, like against the, you know, these systems don't really support this kind of work. There is something about, you know, showing up. It's typically a small group, if not one single person, that's organizing events in our community. You know, so finding ways to support them can look like showing up, acknowledging and honoring that work and that labor and how difficult that can be. This town is really cool. We're really fortunate here because we do have some support, especially Urbana. You know, I live and work in Champaign right now, and I love it. But there's a lot of work to do in that city when it comes to the arts and culture. And there is a city council meeting on Tuesday that is going to discuss a live music grant program for Champaign. We found, and especially in the work that we do at Soundbridge, that a lot of folks don't know how to engage in that. They don't know how to have music in their establishments. They don't know how that works. You know, so there's a lot of education, there's a lot of support
would be really helpful. You know, Champaign's doing a lot right now, and I know that, you know, city council and everybody at the city building is working really hard to figure that out. But, you know, I think the people in this community showing up and really giving a voice to that and what we need, because how can they know if we don't tell them?
If you want to grow the movement, you have to bring in people who are doubtful or on the edge or even maybe in opposition to what you're trying to do. If they feel accepted or comfortable or vibing with you, and because you told the joke that they could understand too, that allows you to grow the movement. If you're just talking to your inside group, you've just got an inside group.
I feel like I'm Bill's hype person. Because I'm going to second what he said, and I believe that we are preaching to the choir here, and what we very possibly need is to be evangelists. We need to, each of us, go out and advocate for the arts and what the arts do. I mean, I say that, and at the same time, I get tired of kind of arguing for and explaining why the arts are important, and have built an office determined not to make excuses for us, but to bring us equally to knowledge building tables and collaborations. Art makes everything better. I'm wearing a button that says, "When artists thrive, we all thrive." And I believe strongly in these things, and strongly in listening, and listening as things change, and trying to then respond and support others who are trying to make beautiful things happen in the world. And so that is, I feel like, one of the missions I have as a human on the planet with others, and also as someone who has acquired a reputation and some monies, trust, that people, I mean, not a trust as in my parents gave me a trust. I wish! No, but they were fierce. They gave me a moral trust. I believe we have to now take it to the streets. We have to evangelize.
I appreciate what you said, Cynthia. I think, yes, we have to reach beyond our circles and out into the world. Arguments and debates can wear you down and can sometimes turn people away. Stories often open that door. Stories are often a way to connect with people who don't see the world the way we do, but maybe can connect in one small way with the lives that we've led. Marshall Gantz is an author, a sociologist that I teach in my storytelling class. He talks about the story of me, the story of us, and the story of now. And the story of me is just what it sounds like. It's your own story. What brings you to the movement? What brought you here? The story of us is what binds us, what brings us in common. And then the last is really important, the story of now. What do we do with these stories? How do these stories move us? And where do we take this next? There's an urgency to the stories we're telling right now. It's important because we're moving somewhere, we're going somewhere. And so the story of now has to be part of the stories that we're telling each other and that we're listening to from others.
There's an expression that goes, many hands make light work. And Chris Rock has a joke about moving a couch. He talks about how moving a couch is only hard when one person is lifting their end, right? But when two people are helping, that couch is easier to move. Solidarity looks like a number of different things. As we are thinking about collaborating with each other, I imagine we're going to have some really lively conversations in just a few minutes and connecting with each other. My research looks at Afrofuturism. And if you don't know what that is, it's a multi-genre art practice that looks at speculating what Black futures look like, or what futures look like with Black people present in them. For me, I look at that as examining what Black created government looks like through Black practices. And oftentimes I'm thinking about what those black futures look like with no one else present but black people. That is important to the research because for me, I think about how often black people have created so many things and then we're historically locked out of that in the textbooks and in the history. That is important for that. But also, what I have to also look at and think about often is that we don't live in a homogenous community. Our community, this beautiful community that I've been part of for 9 years now, it doesn't even seem like I've been here 9 years, is the most wonderful place I've ever lived in my life. Like, we're preaching to the choir, like, everybody here knows this. The idea of the solo practitioner, as Amy talked about earlier, is a very kind of Western concept. As I'm looking at more indigenous practices, especially African practices, it really is about the collective of the community. It really is about everyone lifting that one person up. And what that one person does is not just good for them, but it's good for the entire community. For me, that was the way I grew up. It was the elders who mentored me. It was the elders who gave their money to sponsor trips for me to go visit historical black colleges and universities. It was many of those elders who are no longer here with us that planted those seeds. Even, I'm not just talking about black elders, but I'm talking about even many of the elders that I studied with in grad school who would not let me be quiet about the type of passionate art I wanted to create. But they were like, no, 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 no. You're gonna come to grad school and you are going to be that activist artist as loud as you wanna be. Matter of fact, here are these 10 books that I just bought for you. Read all of them. And I just wanna say though, this solidarity looks like a particular thing. And in closing, I'm also gonna say that solidarity also looks like our connections to the earth. Our future might not look like genetically modified foods. It might look like food from our garden. It might taste a particular way, does not taste like food that is coming out of most of our stores. Right, our connections to the earth, our solidarity to the earth is also means our connections to other people across the earth. Thank you.
To move forward, we need to share our histories. We need to ask each other how we can stand with one another and really be supportive. We need uplift. And we need to learn from our collective leaders, our visionaries, our artists, who could help us see alternatives and ways through our fear-stricken society. We need one another to challenge what's happening now that's endangering, harming, and criminalizing our community. We need it for the days to come. To stand with one another is moral. To stand with one another is just. To stand with one another is patriotic. But we will also keep building together. Welcome to the Summer of Solidarity. So glad to have all of you.
That wraps up the panel, Art is the Great Democrat, the first of the three panels offered as Summer of Solidarity on July 4th and 5th. And that ends our time for this week's Catch the Beat. On July 23rd and 30th, I'll be airing portions of the second panel, We the People, Advancing Rights, Justice in Champaign-Urbana. All four segments will be archived on the WEFT website at weft.org under Public Affairs. You're listening to WEFT Champaign, 90.1 FM, streaming on weft.org, a proud supporter of the Summer of Solidarity. With thanks to Creative Commons for intro and outro music by Kevin MacLeod, see you next time.